It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Filling time with nothing better to do. Tom Karen here at home. Jerry Remy there at home. Remdog, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing, TC?
Good, thanks. Hey, I want to start with an update here, because last week you announced you were going to be able to get back into MGH, get your treatment going. That was Friday. How'd it go?
Really well. You know, I was surprised when I went to the hospital how it wasn't very much activity at all, because they're not allowing any visitors in there or anything like that. But, you know, most of the COVID patients are in the main part of the hospital. Where I go for my treatment is in the cancer center, so we're a little bit separated. I had to go to a different location than I normally do, but everything went very well. It was about a 4 or 5 hour day for me, and I feel a little bit shaky the next day, but, you know, I bounce back the following day. So everything's perfect. I'm glad I was able to get back in there and get back on schedule. But it's amazing when you go to the hospital now, you know, you have to check in. They give you hand sanitizer right away. They give you a mask. Everybody in the hospital is wearing a mask. So it's very, very much different than what we normally see.
You know, you've been doing this on and off for, what, 11, 12 years now, since your very first diagnosis?
Yes.
How different was, I mean, because thankfully, I haven't been to a hospital through any of this, and none of my family has. So you're going in there. You're going into the middle of it. How different was everything?
You know, I was a little bit apprehensive, you know, to be honest with you, before I went in. But then when I got there, I felt fine. I was amazed at how organized and how clean and how, you know, how they had everything set up for the protection of the people that were going in. And then once I got into the room, I was absolutely fine. It was like just being in there at any other time. And, you know, fortunately, they let me go up the back elevator, so I'm not in there with a large group of people. And I come back down the elevator, and it's so I'm pretty much by myself the whole time. So I felt really good about it. When I got home, it was kind of a relief for me for two reasons. You know, I felt comfortable going into the hospital, and I felt very comfortable getting my treatment. So, you know, it was a good day for me.
It's funny, isn't it, Dia? You and I were texting over the weekend that I was laughing that you were talking about how nice it was to get back to your routine. Not many guys are happy to get back to cancer treatments, but that's where we are now in life, right?
I know. You know, it had been 6 weeks since I've been in there. The last time I was in there was actually the couple of days before I went to spring training. And since that time, it's been canceled for obvious reasons. So it was like, you know, this was like Christmas morning for me to get out and actually go into Boston, go into the hospital, you know, see the doctors and patients that I know and the nurses that I know and get my work complete. So it was a good feeling. You know, it was kind of starting to eat at me a little bit that I was missing a couple of treatments. But everything's good. Everything was fine. And, you know, so now I'm back at it every 3 weeks.
No, I hadn't been in the city. I don't think since I got back, I don't think I had driven into Boston. I've driven into Nesson a few times that first couple of weeks, but that's Watertown. So we went in the other day, we got a new dog. We adopted a dog and we had to go into Boston. We adopted her in Boston. I did a lap around Fenway for the first time. And you've done this before. It's so weird. It is so quiet and there's nobody there.
No, you know, the whole city's like that. And you know, when I drove in the other day, I left the same time I normally do, which was crazy because there's absolutely no traffic on the road at all. I have like a 7 o'clock appointment in the morning. So I leave here about 5:30 to get into the appointment. I mean, there was absolutely zero, no cars on the road at all. I got there like I was 45 minutes early for my treatment. But the whole city is just, you know, it's the way it should be. Quite honestly, there's nothing going on. It got very little busy over the weekend because we had this great weather and people wanted to take advantage of that. I understand that, but boy, you still got to be safe. I mean, we're still up there. You know, I think we're number three in the country as far as the COVID-19 cases goes. And, you know, you got to be careful out there. You got to wear your mask if you got to be out and do that separating as they talk about, because I think the weather gets better. And now that the country's starting to open a little bit, it seems like people are going a little bit too far with that. And that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, people are talking about quarantine fatigue. You know, people you shelter down. I kept saying at the beginning, it felt like when you're getting ready for a snowstorm, right? You get everything and you button down the house and you move the cars in the garage, you get everything ready. And then, you know, but that is usually over 3 days later. It's 7 weeks later. It's 8 weeks later. And like you said, now you get an 80 degree day like we had on Sunday, 70 degrees.
Yeah.
People were out. I went for a run and there were people everywhere when I was out. It was the first time I really saw that. And nobody wearing masks. Now it's the law. You have to wear a mask. But it's crowded. People are going to get antsy when it gets warm.
No, you know, and I feel bad. There are people really hurting out there. And I can understand what a lot of, you know, the people want to do is get back to work. And, you know, you want to enjoy some good days. I just hope they don't fall into the trap. It kind of reminded me a little bit about when we were in Florida, when this was first starting. And we were kind of separated from all this. And you went, we didn't really hit you until you came back to Massachusetts. And you went, wow, this is bad. You know, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit right now, where people are starting to get out because the weather's getting better. And when you, when you're outside, you don't think about this virus, you know. But it's still around, man. And I'm telling you, people got to be careful because it's starting to move out west now, as you can see, you know, by some of the tracking that's going on. So it's far from over. And I worry about some of these demonstrations that are going on. And I worry about some of these folks that are going back to work. I mean, I know you got to get back to work. I know you got to make money. But it's just, for me, it's almost too soon.
So as things start to get back to work, we're going to start talking more about baseball and sports returning. Now, the latest, and every week we have a new version, but the latest is that sort of Eastern Division, Central Division, Western Division, three divisions, 10 teams each. But what I, the latest thing everybody's saying is they'll be back at their ballparks, not in Florida.
Yeah.
But you'll play at Fenway Park, no crowd,
and
players would be able to stay home. They'll be asked to isolate, but there won't be anybody keeping tabs of them. Sounds to me like we're getting closer to something that might work. Don't you agree? Like, these are a little more manageable than asking everybody to stay in a hotel in Florida.
I would agree with you, but I've got bad news for you. I heard from a source this morning, and I think it's a pretty reliable source, that that plan has been Dixied already. So we may be talking about something else in the next few days. You know, I don't, you know, I can't say for sure. It seemed like a reasonable plan to me when at first, the best that I had heard so far. It seemed to make sense where you, you know, you're going to be close to all your teams that you had to visit, but you still got to travel. You still got to stay in hotels. You still got to do things like that. I'm kind of glad about the home ballpark, being in your ballpark. I think that makes a lot of sense. But from what I understand, that idea has been thrown out the window too. So now we wait for the next one to come out, whenever that may be, in a couple of days. And everybody's got some kind of idea they're throwing around, but I don't think anything's sticking right now.
From what you're hearing, where's the confidence level? Do they still think there will be baseball, or is that still up in the air?
I think that's very much up in the air. You know, I think everybody talks about that there's going to be baseball, but I'm not 100% convinced myself that there is going to be, because I think it's a number of reasons. You know, as we talked about at the beginning of this, TC, you know, this is still moving around. This is not gone. Just because they're on some places around the downside of the slope, that doesn't mean it's gone. And people are getting antsy now. They're getting out there. I'm really worried about a recycling of this that, you know, that could happen. And the other thing with baseball is the logistics. How do you figure out a season? How do you do it the right way? Keep people safe. Keep the players safe. Keep their families safe. Keep clubhouse attendance safe. Keep everybody safe through all of this. I don't know. I'm not as optimistic as I thought I was going to be about it at this time. You know, hopefully I'm wrong. I mean, because there's nothing more than I want to go back and do some baseball games. I mean, really, I think we all need it. But it has to be done at the right time, and it has to be done the right way. Because if you don't, you're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, your confidence level, like all of ours, has kind of gone up and down week to week, depending. You know, I had an interesting conversation. Mitch Moreland came on the show. And Moreland was interesting because he's an older guy, oldest guy on the Red Sox. He's got three young kids. He's got a wife, you know, and he said, he goes, listen, I don't know that I'd be willing to leave them for 3 months to be in ice. Kind of what we heard Mike Trout say. And who was the Clayton Kershaw, I think, said it. Moreland said straight up, he goes, listen, I got to hear what the plan is. He goes, but I'm not sure I'm willing to leave my family for 3 months to play baseball. You know, there's got to be a way that we can continue our lives and still play. And that's a big hurdle to cross when you get, because baseball, you know, their established stars are older than other sports, right? You know, when the baseball, your superstars are in their 30s, they're the guys with families.
Right. I would certainly agree with him. You know, if I was a member of the union, well, you know, I still am a member of the union, but if going through these discussions, I would have some definite reservations about it. And I'm sure that's going to be a major issue. You know, when they finally come up with a plan that they think is going to work, they're still going to have to pass it by the players. And you've got guys like Mitch Moreland saying, look, I don't want to be by myself for 3 months. You know, and I think that's going to be run pretty rampant through the, you know, through the association. So there's so many different things that have to go perfect, I think, for baseball to come back. I really do. And what, the number one thing is this coronavirus is still around. It's not gone. You know, that's the biggest thing of all. It's, you know, you can figure out plan after plan after plan, but until this thing is gone, I don't see how you can do anything. Like, football is very confident right now that they're going to be able to play. I'm not so confident. They start in July, if I'm not mistaken, right, TC?
Right, games are in July. They're playing preseason games in August. That's right around the corner.
How are they going to keep those guys safe?
And they're crashing into each other. I mean, that's, you know, that's full contact.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I just feel a little bit more down about it than probably the last time we talked.
You know, one thing I think baseball will have as an advantage is watching what other leagues do, right? They're not in the same rush. Gary Bettman from the NHL last week was on one of the national shows, and he said, listen, and I was glad to hear a commissioner say this. He said, this isn't a race to see who can be first. And right. I think some of us have looked at it that way, right? Well, if you can be the first back, you'll be the sport that – and I think they have to watch that. Now, in other countries, and we'll get to Korea in a moment, but Taiwan has had baseball. And I believe it's Spain and Germany are opening up their soccer to start training – with the hope that they'll be playing games again by the end of the month, by the beginning of June. And so I think, you know, if you're baseball, you have to watch how that all happens, right? What happens, what works, what doesn't, that might give you a better idea.
I definitely agree. And it's also where, you know, to me, the biggest thing is what situation your country's in with this, with the health problem, you know, but I agree with you. They're going to be watching all of those leagues, you know, to see how they do it. How it's working, how it turns out for them. And I wouldn't want to be on a committee right now to have to decide on baseball. I really wouldn't, because that would be so difficult to figure everything out. And, you know, As I said, I'm not quite as hopeful as I was a couple of weeks ago, but I still hope it does come back in some form or fashion, even if it's for 50 games. I don't care.
Right.
You know, just to get something under the belt. But, as you said before, I think it's going to be tough. The longer it goes, I think it's going to be tougher and tougher to convince the players it's worth coming back for the remainder of the year.
But 50 games is interesting because I think if you can get 2 months of a regular season plus a playoff, that's enough to make it something, right? Somebody said you could have a 60-game tournament. It's almost like the World Baseball Classic where you'd have more teams make the playoffs, whatever. But give me a season, right? And if you did that, you don't really have to start till August, right? To have August and September baseball, playoffs in October, November. So they've got time. They do have a little time, but it's going to be hard. Now, I'm assuming you didn't stay up till 1 a.m. to watch opening night in Korea, which was Monday night.
No.
I figured you didn't. I told you this before we came on the air. It's classic, only baseball. Opening day, ESPN doing the game. I don't even remember who was playing. It opened in a rain delay. 40-minute rain delay to start the season. Welcome back to baseball.
Let's throw it back to TC.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I've been filling for 7 months. What's another 40 minutes? But it's interesting because, you know, they're doing it. And Taiwan's been doing it. But Taiwan's like the size of New Jersey and New York City. You know, Taiwan's very small. And it's not really a major league. Korea is a major league. Like, that's a big deal in Korea. They've got 53 million people in Korea. And they were, you know, one of the first countries to deal with all of this. It's a very strange sight. Empty crowds, empty stadiums. They had big banners across the sections that had images of people. And I love this. Like we're doing right now, everybody's doing Zoom. They had huge scoreboards with fans zooming in. So you had fans up on the scoreboard cheering between innings. umpires, coaches wearing masks. Some players out in the field wore masks. There was a first baseman. It was funny. He kept pulling his mask down over first base.
Yeah.
But they had it on. So, you know, it's baseball. Let's see what happens over the next few weeks. Interesting thing, though, they have in their ruling already, in their rules, that if somebody gets positive, the commissioner, whatever it is, the management of the league will immediately meet and decide. Like, they're talking about potentially 3 weeks where they stop everything again.
Yeah.
And for baseball here, that would almost be worse than not playing. Like, if you play and 2 weeks later have to shut everything down, you're not going to look good.
You're exactly right. And, you know, as you've said at the beginning, I have very little interest in watching that that kind of baseball. I enjoy Major League Baseball, where you see the best of the world. And that's what I'm looking forward to watching. But it's interesting that they got going. And I didn't realize they were wearing masks on the field. That's going to be weird because, you know, you get breathing heavy and you got to breathe into this mask. And it's kind of, it's all very bizarre. But, you know, good for them that they got it going. But, the commissioner said, or whoever he may be over there, you know, the fact that, you know, one guy gets sick, they got to shut down. And that's going to probably happen here. If one person gets sick here, they're going to have to shut down. And you're right. That's worse than even starting it at all.
You know what they call them? They don't call them the commissioners. They call them the elders. The elders. I think you and I could be the elders. We can be the elders.
Yeah, that would sound like something from England, wouldn't it?
You're right. The elders. You know what I was thinking? I was watching it. I kept thinking, nobody breaks down the middle infielders opening their mouths. How are you going to do that? You know, you're the best at breaking that down.
Everyone
will know. That'll take that all away. All right. 2004. I want to get back to that because last week we talked about the Yankee series. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, through the end of the week, we're running the World Series on NESN. And it was, you know, they swept the Cardinals, obviously.
Yeah.
And it was almost, you know, a foregone conclusion after they came back against the Yankees. But you still had to win. If you did all that against the Yankees and then lost the World Series, it would have been another tragic moment for the Red Sox.
Yeah, you know, but the funny thing for me is, I don't know, I felt like after they beat the Yankees, I went, yes, okay, that's what we've been looking for. You know, we finally beat the Yankees, especially after 2003. And to me, the World Series is like a blur. Now, we were doing it together, and to me, nothing really stands out. It wasn't even really a series. You know, it was a sweep by the Red Sox. The biggest thing for me was the last out of the game, and yes, but the world champs, you know, and here comes the parade and the party, and everything's going to start right now, but there's very little I remember about those four games because it was like dessert after the main meal. You know, it really was. And you know, once they got off to a couple of game lead, it was like they're gonna win this thing, no problem. And it wasn't the excitement that you usually get for a World Series because it was almost a foregone conclusion that they were gonna win it after they beat the Yankees. So I don't have a lot of incredible memories about the World Series, except the final out, you know, and it was like, yes, it's done. We finally got one. There it is, you know. And strange. I'll bet the ratings for last week's games will probably be better than this week's games.
Right. Yeah, the only thing I remember vaguely, and I didn't look this up. I haven't looked up the World Series stuff, is I remember game one got tight. They had a big lead, and then they kind of blew the lead. And I think Bellhorn hit a two-run homer off the pesky pole.
Yeah.
In right field, and that gave them a two-run lead again, and then they put it away. And once they won game one, they were off to the races after that.
Yeah, it was off. It was not even you're at the edge of your seat, you know, watching this thing. You know, you just kind of knew, you know. And you're right about Bellhorn. Bellhorn was a pretty good player for that team. A lot of people don't remember him or talk about him, but, you know, he did a very solid job for the Red Sox in the short time that he was here. You know, pretty good defensive second baseman. Got some big hits for him. Had the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And, you know, he gave him the start, as you mentioned, in the World Series. And then they never looked back. It was like, you know, it was, let's have the final out. Let's all celebrate something we haven't had in a million years. So, you know, that's how I feel about it.
You know what you forget, too, is when you talk about Bellhorn, is you forget that until Pedroia in 07, they were going through a second baseman every year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were trying to fill. They'd never found the new Jerry Remy. They were still trying to find a Rem dog over there. But they went Offerman for a couple of years. But then it was like Todd Walker in 03, Mark Bellhorn in 04, Tony Graffanino in 05, which I had to look up.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, second base was kind of a weak spot for him, you know. But they filled in with guys that, you know, were capable of getting the job done. And Bellhorn was one of those guys. What was it, Pokey Reese that made the final ground ball against the Yankees, the play against the Yankees, the final ground ball to throw to first base? Pokey
Reese, right? Yeah, very good. Yeah.
So, I mean, they had a bunch of them, you know, go through there. But then finally, when Pedroia got here, that was the end of that for a long time. And he ended up being probably the best in Red Sox history. You know, people ask me about that all the time. And I say, you know, well, Bobby Doerr, you know, is in the Hall of Fame. He's got to be the best second base for the Red Sox history. But Pedroia's always been picked as the best. I mean, maybe because he's the most recent, you know. But if he makes the Hall of Fame, you got to put him right up there with Doerr. So, you know, I think that position has been covered very well for the last number of years.
And no doubt about that. The other thing I was remembering looking back on it was Derek Lowe. I'd forgotten, and he said on the show last week, we've had some great 04 guests, it's been fun, that he was going to leave the team because he didn't think he was going to be on the roster. So, remember, he'd lost the last couple. He wasn't in the rotation. And it was Jason Varitek who convinced him, even if you're not on the roster, you got to stick around. He was the longest tenured pitcher at that point. Wound up in the bullpen. We all know he got the win in game 3 against the Angels, pitching the 10th inning. Then he wound up getting the start in game 7. He got the win against the Yankees. And he pitched brilliantly in game 4. He was the winning pitcher in all 3 series and reclaimed his career, right? Signed a big deal after that, the Braves and Dodgers and all of that. But he was on the edge of not making the roster in the playoffs.
Well, let me tell you a funny story, TC, and this is the honest truth. We're on an airplane and we're going somewhere.
Yeah, California. I was on the plane. I remember this. Plane? I was on the plane. I know where you're going.
Okay, so I'll tell the fans out there. So where I sit, I was sitting toward the front of coach, and of course the players are behind us, and Derek had a few pops on the flight that night. And he starts walking up to the front and he's moaning and groaning and this and that. He stops for me and he starts talking about, you know, that these guys up front, he's talking about the manager and the coaches. They don't want me to win. They don't want me to do well. They, you know, they're messing with me and all this stuff. And I said, Derek, I said, you really think that those people up there want you to fail when you go on the mound? I said, their job's on the line up there. You know, I said, they don't want you to fail. They want you to do well. And he goes, well, you know, he's saying that. And, I know he had, you know, a bit too many. So I'm trying to cool him off because he was heading up front. And I'm trying to talk him down from going up there. Because if he ever went up there and started with that stuff, I mean, they would have just tore him apart, you know. So finally, he, you know, I must have talked to him for 5 to 10 minutes. And he probably saw it. And you know, finally he turned around and he started to make his way back. And I'm going, oh, my God. I said, I just stopped something brutal from happening to him, you know. But I said, you really think that these guys want you to do poorly? I mean, their job's on the line. They want you to do well when you go out on the mound. Unfortunately, you haven't done that. Prove them wrong, you know. And it was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
I was a couple rows behind you because, of course, you know, you had the Jerry Remy, like, the suite, you know, up front. You were the closest to first class without being first class.
Right.
Us were piled in behind you. Mike Narachi, our director, and I used to play cribbage 2 rows behind you. But the reason I remember it is because Dana Lavangi, who was the pitching coach and was really Derek Lowe's guy, like he was his, you know, he was his therapist as much as he was his bullpen catcher, right? A lot of the pitchers would go to Dana because Dana had such a good mindset for competing and the mental part of it. And he had come up and talked to Dana a little bit right across the aisle from me. Then he was on his way up, and you got him, and he sat down with you for like 10, 15 minutes. And then I remember him coming back, and Dana said, just looked at him and said, Jerry's right. You know, yeah. And Eric was like, yeah, I guess. And that was the end of it. Yeah. You know, kind of diffused the whole thing. So,
yeah, we didn't need that on the flight. You know, we didn't need him going up front. Not in that condition anyway. You know, wait a day. Go to bed. Go to sleep. And if you feel the same way tomorrow, then go into the office and talk to him, you know. But right. Not tonight.
And I think it was only because somebody had mentioned in a Sunday column that the Red Sox weren't sure if they were going to re-sign him. That's what triggered it all off, right? So now it was in his mind, they don't want him, then they want him to lose, and it all kind of exacerbated. But what a great reclamation job he did in that postseason. Because remember, against the Yankees, Wakefield was going to start game 5, but they threw him in the bullpen in that ugly 19-8 loss to save the bullpen. So right. Derek Lowe then started game 5, and then on 2 days rest started game 7, right. And then started game 4 in St. Louis, and wound up the winning pitcher of that. I do want to get one story from you, though, even though you don't remember a lot from the World Series itself. the parade, because we're going to show the parade on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the great. That was the first duck boat parade, really, that just never ended. You guys went in the river, and you were on Pedro's boat, as I recall, right?
I was on Pedro's boat with his little buddy there. Remember his little buddy?
Nelson,
yes, who's passed away since.
Yes.
And I'm standing there, and Pedro's standing there, and Nelson's right in the middle, and he's waving, and he's, you know, he's doing everything. And it was, but the feeling that I had, it was like, it was almost like a panic attack, because there was so many people. There was so many people, and it was so loud that it was unbelievable to go through that. And then the worst part of it for me was when we were going through the Charles River. It was like, you know, you're on this boat, and the boat really smells, you know. It's like you can smell the gas coming out of it and all that stuff. And I'm, you know, we're floating around, and you can hardly see the people. They're over on the Cambridge side. There were a load of people over there. But I couldn't wait to get out of that water, you know, and then get back to the regular parade. But the amount of people was absolutely remarkable. It really was, and it was awesome. Everywhere you looked up in the building, they were hanging out of the building. You looked down the streets. You couldn't see the end of the street because there were so many people. And I said on our show, the pregame show, this is going to be the biggest celebration you're ever going to see in Boston. And it was. It was huge. And the players really loved it. They really did.
Didn't somebody get hit by a ball in your boat? Did Pedro?
Somebody did.
I remember John Martin, with a picture of him here. Older, our late photographer who we all loved so much, passed away of ALS. But I remember he had like a shot, and a ball came flying in out of nowhere. I don't remember if it was Pedro or somebody. And it was like autograph. You know, people were asking people to autograph. They were throwing
throwing everything up there. You know, baseballs, beers, you know, everything you could get your hands on. They were tossing them up into the boat. But it was quite an experience. You know, it was one for a lifetime, and one obviously that I'll never forget.
By the way, for those of you who don't remember, Nelson De La Rosa was Pedro's friend. And if I recall correctly at the time, he was the fourth smallest person on the planet, under 2.5 feet tall.
Wasn't he a movie star?
He was a big star.
Yeah.
In the Dominican Republic.
They used to throw him around the clubhouse when he came into Fenway. They threw him around. They'd play catch with him.
He was like the mascot.
He's on the boat and he's waving, you know, like this. And his arm came up about my shoulder, and you know, I'm not exactly a big guy, but that was hilarious, you know.
Johnny Damon was on a couple days ago. We had him on Monday. He looks the same. He's got the hair and the beard and everything going. And you know, he called them the idiots. And you know, because you had to sort of be that way if you were gonna come back against the Yankees. You couldn't think about it too much. But the difference between them an hour before the game in the locker room and what they were when they got on the field was what was always blew me away.
Yeah. They played the game hard. They played it the right way. You know, they had fun. They were a team that didn't seem to let Boston bother them at all. You know, good or bad. They were focused on what they were going to do when they got. But they had a good time off the field. They really did. And that would have been a fun team to play on. It really would, because, you know, you're having a lot of fun playing. You're having a lot of fun off the field. I mean, that's a great year. That's what you hope for any baseball player, you know, that you get have that kind of rapport in the clubhouse and you have that kind of success on the field.
Yeah, you look back on it now, and over the weekend we showed Game 6, the bloody sock we talked about last week. We even talked about, I'd forgotten about the A-Rod slapping it out of Arroyo's hand. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If he's called safe, if they don't overrule, because in real time, they didn't call him out. They called him safe, and Jeter came around and scored.
Right.
A whole different game. You know, those are moments. That's the beauty of baseball. Like, one moment, the entire thing could have turned on it.
Could have turned the whole series around, yeah. So, yeah, A-Rod, he was very unpopular with those guys. Very unpopular. Very.
Yeah, we had Arroyo on last week. It was funny to talk about that because he's, you know, he didn't know what was going on. He knew he'd been slapped, but you never know. If there was no replay at the time. So did the umpire get an angle of it? And you watch it. The beauty of it now, I was watching it again. Joe West comes charging across the diamond like, I got this, you know, interference, boom, boom, boom. Not often we were excited Joe West was in the middle of it all, but he came to the rescue that day.
Yeah, he certainly did. That was a great moment. Yeah, it really
stuff.
Was.
All right, well, it's fun. There we go. We just blew through another half hour. That was an easy one.
Yeah, that was good.
We keep wondering what we're going to talk about, and every week we come up with something to talk about.
Hey, just flip on the camera. We can do anything. It doesn't matter.
Well, Jerry, I'm glad it went well Friday. Stay well, and we'll do it again next week.
Very good, TC. You too.
All right. 1 a.m. Korean baseball. I'll see you there. Well, I'll call you on Zoom. We'll watch it together.
Hey, the latest I stay up is to watch the Jordan documentary, and that ends at 11.
Yeah, that's been good.
Yeah, really good.
Tito got a little time. We were talking a little baseball. That's going to be fun. All right, Jerry, good stuff. We'll do it again next week. Thanks, buddy.
All right, TC.
That's Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Caron, and this has been the TC and Jerry Podcast.